So I was an athlete with a lot of ambitions and dreams, and I was fortunate enough to have a pretty good high school career and walk on at the University of South Carolina. But with those dreams and ambitions came immense amounts of pressure and stress, and that pressure and stress built up and often led to periods of anxiety and depression that I faced as an athlete. As a coach, I've seen many players go through similar or even greater mental health struggles, and it's challenging. It's challenging to know what to do, how worried or concerned we should be, and what the appropriate action is. As a parent of some small children, I know my children are likely to stay involved in sports as they grow up. And while I greatly appreciate all the positive and good sports can offer them, the growing mental health challenges that athletes face, well, that worries me. It really does concern me. And so after reading the book, What Made Maddie Run by Kate Fagan this summer, I became even more concerned and more worried as Fagan recounts the struggles and this tragic death of this All-American teenage athlete named Madison Hollerin. Now, we're fortunate to have Kate Fagan on the podcast for the next 2 weeks to share with us Madison Hollerin's story, to share with us her own story, and also some of her insights into the mental health crisis that we are facing in sports today. You're listening to the Coaching Culture Podcast. I'm JP Nurbin alongside my co-host, Nate Sanderson. Every week in around 30 minutes, we're giving you strategies and tools for you to grow as a leader and build your culture. We know the reason why most teams struggle, and that is because they have a dysfunctional culture. This leaves coaches frustrated with entitled players, losing seasons, and toxic environments. And at Thrive on Challenge, we believe that the silver bullet is a transformational culture. We help coaches to create and sustain transformational cultures so they can strengthen relationships, raise standards, and inspire others to make an impact. To learn more about our workshops, retreats, and mentorship program, go to thriveonchallenge.com. You can also get the coaching notes PDFs for every Coaching Culture episode by subscribing to our weekly newsletter. You're listening to episode 138, Prioritizing the Mental Health of Our Athletes, with author Kate Fagan.
All right, well, we're glad to have Kate Fagan on the podcast here this week, and she is the author of the book, What Made Maddie Run. And before we get into that story, I just want to share with you, Kate, that this book has been incredibly powerful, I think, in my experience as a coach. I came across it, recommended on Twitter, probably 6 months ago. Just a couple people were talking about it, and then JP had mentioned it, and I had ordered it some time ago just because I had seen it, and I'm like, I think I need to finally read this book. So I remember sitting down on a Friday night and opening it up, and I could not stop reading it. By noon the next day, I was done with it. By 6 o'clock that night, I had ordered copies for every one of my former captains that had played for me. I ordered one for every coach on my staff, and it's now become required reading, certainly for anybody that's going to coach with me. And in fact, the parent meeting that I had after that, after reading the book, we made copies of the book available to every parent in our program, simply because I told them it's hard for me to remember what it's like to be a female college athlete, you know, and face some of the pressures that Daddy went through. And so we're just really excited to have you not only be able to share a little bit of Maddie's story, but also a little bit about your own story as it kind of weaves itself into the tale. So for those in our audience that haven't read the book or maybe haven't come across Maddie's story, do you think you could just take a few minutes here and kind of share her journey as it's sort of portrayed and told in the book for us?
Yeah, well, thanks, Nate. Thanks for that sharing of what the book meant to you. It's always really heartening to hear that it's making an impact in the way that we hoped it would be. And thanks for having me on the podcast. So Maddie's story, Maddie, and I, you know, honestly, because her name, her nickname is in the title, it's kind of how I always refer to her. But Madison Hollerin was a young student athlete at the University of Pennsylvania, so an Ivy League school, and she was running cross country and track and field at Penn. And she came from a town in New Jersey called Allendale, suburb of New York City, kind of a town in which, just to kind of give your listeners a snapshot, 98% of kids who graduated from our high school went to college. Not extremely affluent like many of the suburbs outside of New York City, but very comfortable life in Allendale. And she grew up with brothers and sisters, and her parents were still together. So that kind of gives you an idea of this kind of like quote unquote typical American childhood and past. So she won state championships in soccer, and then also she won the 800 meter state championship in New Jersey in high school, and decided instead of playing soccer, which she loved in college, because she had excelled so much at track and she had like almost quote unquote better options in track and field for the college level, she decided to run in college, went to Penn, and it was really that transition from high school to college that triggered in her a kind of what her parents would now say was an undiagnosed depression. She was really struggling during the first semester. I knew that because I had access to so many of her communications, like text and email. And she started seeing someone. And when she went back for a second semester during that freshman year, because of a number of factors, she was trying to quit track and field. It didn't quite work out that way. Of other things, she actually took her own life about a week into second semester of that freshman year. She died by suicide in downtown Philadelphia. And so I heard of the story the day after Maddie died, because I used to live in Philly and I still followed those newspapers. So I remembered the headlines, and it was that first day after her death that kind of started me on the path to wanting to understand in a deeper level than those like those quick headlines, what had happened to Maddie, and trying to pull apart the different variables that led to her death. And that started me down that journey, down that path.
You want to share a little bit about just what that investigative process was like for you? Because the family was very transparent in terms of allowing you access to a lot of Maddie's communications and being able to speak with her friends and people at school. What was that journey like for you as you tried to unravel kind of what happened?
Yes. So in the very beginning, when I was working at ESPN at the time, and in the very beginning when I wanted to write the original piece, which was in ESPN, the magazine, you know, the scope of what I was trying to answer was pretty limited. I just, the headline that I had read the day after Maddie died said, you know, star student jumps to death over grades. And really, I read that headline, and having been a former Division I student athlete, and my sister had run cross country and track at Dartmouth, and I had lived in that world. And then, of course, being in sports journalism, I had never really like left the kind of the energy of the sports world. Like that headline just captured so little for me. And so in the beginning, I really was just, like many journalists are, I just had a curiosity. There was no kind of overarching, you know, putting Maddie in underneath like the umbrella of like what's happening with young kids when it comes to depression and anxiety. Like I had none of that big picture outlook. I simply was like, what happened here? What happened to this one single young student athlete? Like I wanted to answer that question of the quote unquote why. And so I was lucky in the fact that Maddie's family in the aftermath of her death had started the Madison Hollerin Foundation. So because they had already made the decision that they wanted her death to mean something more, it meant that someone in media wanting to tell her story was also important to them to try to spread the message that they were trying to spread through her foundation, rather than, you know, some families deal with it differently and they just don't want any media coverage and they're very private and they're grieving in their way that they want to make, you know, the death of a loved one matter. But Maddie's family had this ambition for the foundation, so we were kind of simpatico and wanting to be able to tell her story. But there was still, so in the beginning it was very much, you know, I did have access, obviously, to her family and talking to the members of her family. And then also Maddie's friends were really great about talking to me and sharing what their perspectives were. But it was really after gaining a lot of trust over the course of reporting that ESPN, the magazine story, and then Maddie's friends and family feeling that I had done a good job in reflecting what they had felt was happening. It was because of that that they really opened up even more and letting me have Maddie's computer, which I didn't have for the magazine article, her text messages, her emails, whatever documents were on it. I had that for the book length work, which was really important in being able to have Maddie's voice and a lot more of her personal insights that she had written down in the book, rather than trying to just completely build her retroactively through reporting.
Yeah, and I think you did an incredible job of weaving the voice of Maddie into the story. I think the other thing that makes the book powerful is that it really isn't just Maddie's story, that there's part of you that, as you mentioned, being a former Division I athlete, and you talk about some of your experiences as a player at the collegiate level, that comes out in the story as well. And I wonder if you would share a little bit about just what were some of the pieces as you were, again, kind of unraveling Maddie's story that really you identified with as a former player, as somebody that's really, you know, continues to be plugged into the athletic world. What was it for you that continued to draw you in personally?
There were really two reasons for feeling the need to share parts of my story in the book. And one of them was that it was by simple necessity. You know, Maddie died when she was 18, and she didn't have the time to offer any sort of, in any of her writing, like really retrospective, like analysis of what had happened, you know, the way that if she, you know, had lived to be 30 or if this is something she had gone through and then gotten to the other side, you would be able to have her own retroactive processing of it. But because none of that existed, it felt imperative to me to be able to bring some of that in. And I very quickly realized that although my story is certainly not parallel to Maddie's, there's small levels of overlap that would allow me as a writer to be able to bring in some of that analysis that could have been missing. And so it felt necessary in that way. And then in the other way it felt necessary was that I learned pretty quickly how, if you're writing about suicide, a lot of consumers of that media can become obsessed with like the why, and like, and become obsessed with like this one person's story, become obsessed with Maddie's story. And her family didn't want that. They really wanted her to be emblematic of what was happening with our kids writ large. And so for that reason, we wanted the book to be able to connect with kids, whether they're athletes or not, who might be dealing with higher levels of anxiety than we've ever seen before. And so we wanted kids who read it, or parents of kids who could see their kids maybe struggling with anxiety, but they didn't necessarily fully relate to Maddie's story. We wanted them to be able to connect with the book. And then all the way to the end, you know, to the other end of that spectrum of someone who might think that their life is very much like Maddie's in the way she feels, like, and they directly connect. We wanted them to be able to relate to the book. So those were the necessities of kind of taking my own story of playing basketball at the University of Colorado, and like that transition to college for me and that freshman year, just it really triggered in me a kind of, I wouldn't say I was depressed, because I'm lucky that my mental health has always been really strong, but I was so anxious. I would have panic attacks over practice and over this questioning of like my love for the sport, and not understanding that those things can fluctuate, not having the kind of perspective you have later in life. And so in the book, I try to share for kids who might feel that level of anxiety, what playing college sports and what really being, you know, what being a, you know, 18, 19, 20 year old can feel like when you're putting pressures on achievement and success. And so those are some of the reasons that I felt like it was imperative to bring my own story into the book.
And I think what's so effective about that is that it provides so many different entry points for people that are reading the story. You know, as I mentioned, I've given this book to coaches that I work with and to parents. I've had players read it. I've had former players read it that are currently in college. My wife's read it. And if nothing else, it's just created an opportunity to be able to have a conversation about, you know, Maddie's story, about pieces of your journey, about some of the research that's in the book, and let them be able to surface, you know, what has been impactful for them or what parts of the story that they identified with. And one of the things that has come up a lot in those conversations is this phrase, and you mentioned a little bit here, the ever-increasing anxiety levels for collegiate athletes, but certainly as a high school basketball coach, you know, we're seeing more of that at lower levels as well. And there's a phrase in the book where you talk about the anxiety that accompanies ambition. Can you unpack that a little bit for us, the anxiety that accompanies ambition?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of ways to look at that phrase, the anxiety that accompanies ambition. I think that if we're taking, first of all, like Maddie's story, or just the story of a high achieving young athlete, let's just say, you know, that's kind of the case study we're looking at right now. I think a lot of what goes unsaid about a high achieving, you know, student athlete, a lot of the variables we don't talk about surrounding that choice to be an athlete and to pursue that that sport at a high level are like the questions over like why someone chooses a sport, why sports in general in our society are so valued. And then that gets to questions of like, for this young athlete, did they choose this sport and this endeavor because they truly love it, or were there rewards in place that almost made it inevitable that they would go down this path? And I think when you look at it that way, like this, the anxiety over achievement, that's just one angle to look at it, of like how many of our kids feel pressured to put themselves on whatever path they feel like they can achieve at the highest level of, for whatever reasons. There's, you know, there's more scholarships available, or perhaps they're musically inclined, even if that's something they don't love, but they have this desperate need to be great because of the cultural pressures that so many of our communities have put on, like this idea of like achievement and greatness. And so, you know, so looking at it from various ways, it's like, well, are our kids doing the things that they love, which doesn't mean anxiety is going to be gone, but it just means that at least there's like this really pure starting point for what they're doing. And I think in the book, we suggest that like, certainly there are some of our young athletes who are obsessed with their sport and are deeply passionate about it, but more than we know, there's this struggle between just wanting to be a high achiever and falling into a sport and deciding that's the way that, you know, they're going to reach this high achievement. So like, that's one way to look at this, like anxiety and achievement. But I think the overall umbrella of it is like, how much of how our kids feel, it comes from inside of them and they put their own pressure on themselves, versus how much is coming from the outside that they've absorbed that tells them that they need to perform at a certain level. And it's not one or the other, obviously. Some kids have a mix, some have one, some have the other. There can be all kinds of different blends, but that's, I think that outward pressure has been gradually on the rise over the last 50 years in our culture. And that's something that throughout the book, I try to like bring in research to show how, to show that that is the case and why that might be the case.
Well, and I think one of the things that, as I went back through kind of my notes from the book last night, getting ready for our conversation here today, I kept noticing how many times I had underlined or highlighted the word expectations. In our work with coaches and in work with my own teams, you know, we try to lay out for our coaches and our players sort of this equation of sometimes our emotions can be generated from simply the expectations that come from the things that we value, our expectations or our preferences or our hopes. And yet when they're compared with the reality, when we get to that moment or that experience, whether it's in college or at a sport or whatever it might be, that comparison of your frame of reference, your perception versus what you expected can often lead to disappointment or frustration or what have you, simply because maybe those expectations have been allowed to become too unrealistic. And I just see kind of that theme sort of throughout the story here. And when you think about that, like, it's as adults, I think as coaches, as parents, we don't want to squash high expectations for our kids. But at some point, there has to be the reality that there's going to be struggle as part of the journey. What is the best way for us to to be able to communicate that with young people that we work with?
Well, so it's there's so many layers to it, but I've found in a lot of the kids that I might talk to, whether they read What Made Maddie Run or whether, you know, they want to work at ESPN someday. I've felt more and more over the last like 10 years that there's this unrealistic, like that word again, expectation over what achievement actually feels like and looks like. And as you articulated, you know, in that question, I think our kids are realizing that the equation that we've often set up for them, that like the happiness is what comes from success and achievement, is so deeply flawed. That doesn't mean that achievement doesn't give you a lot of like well-being, that just the pursuit of that and the making of yourself better doesn't satisfy something within us. That's not what I'm saying. But because of, if we look at, you know, in my mind, a lot of times social media is part of this equation, that any one of us now can see supposedly in the clearest, best light, what the destination looks like. So if you're a young athlete, you can follow your favorite college players and you think you know what college sports are like. And you couldn't have done that 25 years ago. You had to kind of live in your head about it, but you had to live in what it felt like to be a high school athlete in that moment, working hard to try to get better. You couldn't look out and just be able to parachute into someone's life and think that's what the experience is like. And when in advance you think you know what it's going to be like to, you know, become a college athlete because you've seen it in all of these mediums, and then you get there and you realize it's nothing like that, that can be really challenging for a young athlete or, you know, whatever the pursuit might be. And I think that idea, it comes down to cliche really, but the idea that the destination is the goal as opposed to the process, you know, obviously that's like a 1,000-year-old cliche, but it comes really true because I have so many kids who come up to me like, how do I get to ESPN? And I'm like, why is that the goal rather than become the best writer you can be, or become the best, you know, if you love basketball, become the best basketball player you can be, rather than being like, I have to end up at UConn to be happy about my journey. When you really, at the end of the day, have very less control over where you end up than you think you do. Obviously, you have some control, you show up, you do the work and all that, but ultimately, some of that is beyond your control. But what's not beyond your control is like, I want to get, you know, I want to get better, or I want to be great at this thing. And I think too few kids are really focusing on that aspect of it because it's so shiny and it's so shiny to be like, to be able to see on all of our mediums, like, where I could be and what it looks like, and then set that as the goal rather than something more internal.
I wanted to ask you another question here, mm-hmm. too. As I read this from both a coach's perspective and a parent perspective, and as I mentioned, we've given this to some of the parents in our program, the number one feeling that I walked away from after reading the book was I felt scared. I mean, I have two daughters that are not very old. They're 5 and 2, but, you know, you hope someday that they're involved in athletics and you know, you're coaching kids that seem to be fine on the outside, you know, and parents would say the same thing, that their kids have that veneer, you know, even when they're at home. And yet I could see myself in the role of Maddie's dad, or even in her coach when she went and had the meeting to sit down and try to quit the track team. And I thought, if I'm on the other side of that table and I listen to what she shared, I probably would have reacted the same way, to try to find a way to make it work for her so that she could still, not necessarily because I need a great runner, but for her own benefit, you know, this mindset that her being part of the team and still being engaged with the program would be beneficial for her in this place. And I just was sort of overwhelmed with this feeling of how can we know, you know, and how can we know what the right approach is as both a parent, as a coach? And I'm sure you've gotten that question a lot, but how do you answer that when you have concerned parents and coaches that are dealing with kids where we might not know what's going on under the surface? What do you tell us?
Yeah. Well, I think it's not as if I want people who, you know, when they finish the book, they, you know, it wasn't my intention that anyone feels scared, but I do understand that emotion because I don't give you in the book, and I don't believe there is a concrete why for why Maddie died. And I think that's a really important point, because if I was writing the book and I could point to, let's say, an alcohol problem, like that was the issue, right? Or maybe it was like an assault that led to an alcohol problem that led to Maddie's death. Now, if you read that book, then it's almost comforting in a way, because you're like, now I know precisely what to look for. And that was never the case with Maddie's story. And I think that's what makes it so important, is that these beliefs that some of us used to have, that you'd be able to tell if someone was in a place where they were considering suicide, that there would be certain outward projections that everyone in that person's life, at least someone in that person's life, would be able to absolutely pick up on, that core belief that you would be able to know, because there's always one or two things that you absolutely can always tell. That often cannot be the case. And I think Maddie's story is a bit of not a warning, but the point of it is to say that our kids are struggling in new ways that we've never seen before, and yet this isn't always new, but they've been able to project that everything is still fine with them, and that if we're waiting for the thing that's going to knock us over the head before we're willing to start talking about all of the underlying factors with all of our kids, because whether a kid just has some low hum of anxiety, or whether they're struggling in the way Maddie did, there's some way in there where if we open up communication, their experience is going to be better. Whether it's a young player you have who may not be thinking anything about suicide, but might just be wondering if they still love the game, or they might be having a little panic over, you know, the sprints at the end of practice, or there's something buzzing around their head and they think that it's about, you know, they think it makes them weak, or, you know, whatever the case may be. All of us feeling like, you know what we need to do is not wait until we see the telltale sign, and don't talk about it at all until we see that telltale sign. But what we need to do is start talking about this in general and kick things up like you do, you know, like the dust at the bottom of a lake, not dust, but dirt, and get this stuff circulating so that our kids don't feel alone and it doesn't get to that point. I think that's really kind of what the message should be, is like, we can't wait. We have to be proactive and not reactive. And I think, at least I've seen, and, you know, since the book has come out, it does feel like there are a lot of readers who have taken it that way. Who are like talking to their kids, whether they're coaching them or whether they're their actual kids, and being proactive and trying to discuss some of these things. And I'm hoping that that is the kind of hope and optimism that can be taken from it.
I appreciate that perspective. And I think one of the passages that really stuck out to me, and we talk about a lot as a coaching staff, you know, when we, again, we're faced with this, we really don't necessarily know what's happening under the surface, is when you talked about the relationship that you had with your trainer at the University of Colorado. And I just want to read this couple sentences here where you described how significant that was for you in your own experience. And you said, "The truth is, it's unusual for an athlete to be open and honest with a coach or a trainer, but she knew me on different levels as an athlete, as a student, as someone who enjoyed talking about books, as an 18-year-old kid from New York. She saw my value on other levels and would recognize that I was more than someone who just happened to put on a Colorado jersey." And the phrase that kind of comes back to me in that is, every kid that we work with needs to be known, you know, and you found that kind of outlet, you found that relationship with a trainer. But I wonder if you could just talk about the importance of that from a coach's perspective, of trying to know the person and not just the player that we are working with.
Yeah, I think it's that simple point that I experienced at Colorado that I didn't know at the time was going to be so important to me, that there was someone in that program who engaged me outside of my ability to shoot the basketball. I didn't know that was going to be so important, and then it was. And that idea has been hammered home to me over the last couple of years as I've talked to so many kids, high schools, you know, students, college athletes, and you hear that point repeated back again and again and again, is that there, and this, I hope this is becoming kind of an archaic belief among coaches, but I know it existed still when I was playing, that like, let's build a wall here between you as the athlete and then you as the person. And when we step onto the court, you know, that's all we have. I'm the coach. You don't know anything about me outside of that I'm the coach and I coach this team. And you're the player who does these things well on the court. And that seemed to be kind of like the way that a lot of coaches would operate. And, you know, it has some benefits to it, certainly. But the more kids I talk to, the more they feel like they bring a better version of themselves to the playing field when they feel like people actually know them and care about them outside of their skill set on the court. And sometimes I guess that can be counterintuitive, right? It's like, well, we don't want to distract from the point of being on the field and the court and in practice and during a game. But what you always see end up happening is that someone feels more invested and they feel seen. And I think I'm seeing more and more coaches at the college level and high school level, like really buy into that approach more and more. Certainly it takes more work. I mean, it depends kind of what your personality type is, but it shouldn't really feel like work. It should kind of feel like, okay, yeah, why do I have these artificial walls up? Like, we should be able to step onto the practice field and we all are bringing our full selves, you know, this is a bit of a cliche too these days, but that should be how you get the best out of someone. It actually makes common sense, but we've had, at least, especially at the college level, I've had to, not that I'm the only one doing this, but like when I talk to college coaches, I try to like break down this belief that, you know, college coaches have very strange beliefs about how much working out should be done. Apparently they think like more than science tells them, like less rest. And they have all these ideas about how focused everything needs to be specifically on the sport. And I think those are gradually starting to erode as you're seeing kids, especially in, you know, 2020, want a more well-rounded experience where they feel like they're actual a whole person who's playing the sport.
Now that's it for the first part of our conversation with Kate Fagan. Come back next week, because next week episode, Kate's going to really start to dive into some more ways that we as coaches can better support our athletes, the ways that we can continue to engage in dialogue and conversation around mental health. It's so, so important. You're not going to want to miss next week's episode. Also, head on over to thriveonchallenge.com. I've got so many different articles and PDFs out there for you that aren't just going to help you be a better coach or to build a better culture, but really focus in on improving your relationships with your athletes, because that is honestly one of the most important things that we can do, is to build healthy relationships where they know that they are valued for who they are and not what they do on the field or on the court. So head on over to thriveonchallenge.com.